Hey everybody, this is Brian Grasso, founder and CEO of the IYCA, and I'm not even going to spend a whole lot of time today introducing this guest because, well, I'll give you a brief background. I watched him present at a conference last May. It was a conference on high school football training, and I was floored. He was breaking down all the systems he uses, you know, through high schools and colleges, all the stuff he's done over his 20-year career, and how he develops a training system and a coaching system that brings freshmen in and progresses them over time. I absolutely fell in love with this stuff because it was one of the only college coaches who I ever heard make sense. I mean, make perfect sense about how to progress athletes through a process rather than just bring freshmen in and start banging at them right away to put up huge numbers and, you know, where do you go from there? So I've said this to his face. I've meant it every time. I've said this to anyone who I've ever talked to about this man. Joe Ken is our special guest today, the very best college strength coach in the country. I don't care who you are or what your opinion is. This is mine. This guy is the best there is for a variety of reasons, and we're going to talk about a few things today. So, Coach Ken, first of all, thanks for taking a few minutes with us here today. I really appreciate that.
Well, Brian, thank you. And one of the things that I'll tell your audience is you also spoke at that conference, and one of the things that I truly appreciated was your passion in trying to develop kids at this time in our country's situation where physical education is at an all-time low, child obesity is at an all-time high, and we have some serious issues when it comes to youth development. And the one thing that I want your audience to know is the true passion you have. If there's one thing I've learned in all my years of giving presentation, listen, people talk, and actually it really hit home when I read Bo Schembechler's book, Bo's Lasting Lessons. One of the chapters is talking about scrap the script, and he was talking about when he was giving presentations, you know your audience, and sometimes it's forget about what you got on paper. If you speak from the heart and with passion, more great things will accomplish than anything that you've written down and robotically try to reiterate to parents and or coaches and or athletes. And, you know, you turned on slide one and never turned slide two and went on an hour straight. And that is one thing that I've kind of became more and more aware of is not necessarily the subject matter. It's how it's presented that's going to grasp your audience and they're going to take something away with it. So I think that people need to understand that the guy who's leading the IYCAs is true, unadulterated passion for what you're trying to accomplish. So I appreciate that also. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate that coming from you. Let me jump in by maybe just kind of laying out this first question, and we'll see where this goes from here. But one thing that's always intrigued me about what it is you've done for a couple decades now is, you've got X number of athletes in a weight room. And I know you well enough, having, you know, several private conversations with you and watching you present that one time, that you've got a system or somehow a checks and balances in place, knowing how well you dive into researching, you know, how long the average play lasts in college football versus how much time the defensive unit has as rest on an average. I mean, I know you research all that stuff with your own experiences. Let's just say you got 30 to 60 to 80 or whatever it might be number of athletes in a weight room. Coach, like, how do you make it so that each one of these kids are getting the most out of that workout in an efficient way? Now, I understand that can't be foolproof, but how do you script it so that you know each of these kids is absolutely getting the most effective training process they can that day?
Well, like we talked earlier, you know, I love when, and again, if somebody's actually doing this, they're tremendously smarter than I am, and I give them all the credit in the world for doing this. But, you know, it's like we were talking about with sports specificity. Another one of my favorites is, we have individualized programs for all our athletes, and there's no way you can do that. I mean, when I was at Arizona State, that's regardless of how big my staff is. So we're writing individual programs for 550 athletes over 22 sports.
Right.
It's just not happening.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've learned as I've developed our long-term athletic development plan is this. I mean, when we really look at it and you look at society as a whole, you can look at generations as a whole, you really have norms.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if we learned anything from simple mathematics and things that we've learned in high school is, you know, you have your mean, median, and modes and standard deviations. I like to call what we've accomplished and what we've tried to develop is I call it the bell curve mentality. You know, what do, you know, two standard deviations or close to about 85% is generally two standard deviations in the bell curve. You know, most of the time, most of your kids are going to fall into that part of the curve. So that is what we develop our programs off of during the each level that an athlete is with us. So, you know, the first year, okay, what are most first year guys what can they get done? Most of them. And we develop a structured program for that. Okay, now they've been in a program with us for a full year. What do we think we can progress most of these kids to the next year?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then so we follow that type of mentality, and what that allows us to do is develop a plan that, one, is somewhat systematic, and I'll back up about the people outside those standard deviations, but build a program up that, although things change, certain movements relatively stay the same with slight variations to continue some form of mastery. Year one, we break down things slower because for the most part, those kids, yeah, the one thing we have to remember also, and I'll throw, you know, go back and forth, is we recruited them to play their sport. We've not recruited them to be a lifter. If they did, we would be out on the road and kids would be getting lifting scholarships. So
right.
We have to remember this. Some guys love the weight room. That's true. I love the weight room. I would have rather lifted than played in games. I was a playhead. But what I learned in my very first year as a head strength coach is you cannot expect everybody to have that passion for the weight room, because why are they here? They're here to play football. They're here to play basketball. They're here to play tennis. Your goal as a coach is to educate them, find ways to keep them engaged, and understand and embrace the process of what the weight room or the conditioning or whatever you want to call your part of the puzzle, how that can affect them in a positive manner. Sometimes you're going to win. Sometimes you're going to lose. Most of the time, you're going to find those guys are in the bell curve, and they're going to do it because that's part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that help when you develop a plan based off that. See, each year you give a guy a slight change in the program. One, it keeps them engaged. Two, you don't get into that phrase that most people do at the college level, or I'm sure you've heard at any level when somebody's trained with somebody for a long duration is, well, you know, I got about 3 years with them, and then they're going to peak out, and then we just got to hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's telling me that you're doing the same exact thing with an athlete for multiple training cycles within their long-term athletic development and careers with you. So how do you – and again, we all started that way. Let me retract and let everybody know that. I did it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I didn't know no better. Who did? You just trained. You know, that's just the way it was. And if you – you know, if you hit a stalemate, then, oh, maybe I'm overtraining. I'll back down a couple of weeks, and then you build back up. You hit your peak, and then you maybe, you know, you hit a stalemate. So it's one of those deals. I mean, I don't want anybody to think that I've been doing this for 20 years this way. Hell, no way.
Right.
I just can't. I mean, it's just not true. I don't like to use so I'm sorry about that. But,
no worries.
You know, we over time began to develop different levels, and now we call it people use the term block in many different ways. For us, our block system is based off of training age with us. So when an athlete enters our program, and this could be any sport, they enter as a block zero athlete because zero is their training age under our system of training. I don't necessarily, you know, what's the right word? I don't necessarily not worry about what they've done before they've got to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will take that into consideration if a kid, you know, is a competitive lifter in high school or has a tremendous high school strength coach, you know, like a Carlo Alvarez. Somebody coming out of Cincinnati St. X is going to be more prepared than a kid coming out of inner city school that never even knew they had a weight room.
Right.
But there's also things that I've learned even in those dynamics that just like when it's just like if I send a kid to the NFL, as good a job as I think I've done with the guy for 5 years, I'm sure there's certain things an NFL strength coach, based on their experience with that kind of level of guys, like, oh, well, you're lacking a little here. I mean, everybody can pick apart somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to know wholeheartedly that at the end, I did the best of my abilities, educating, preparing the athlete, trying to build some type of relationship. Hopefully it was a positive one when we're with them as long as we are.
Mm-hmm.
But that they knew that, hey, Coach Ken or Coach House gave me the best opportunities I could to get better. Obviously, there's different ways to do it, and I'm going to learn different ways when I go on to the next level. But he got me to this point, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. You know, I hope that happens, you know, 99% of the time. But so our biggest deal is long-term development is based off of a bell curve. What people can accomplish when they come in, it's very, very rudimentary. I mean, I truly believe if I could do a lot of things over again and what I've accomplished with my Block Zero program, not necessarily on the college level, but what I've kind of experienced training both my sons, is I would love to get an opportunity to talk to people in curriculum development and really try to rehash how we set up PE classroom time for middle schoolers.
And I couldn't agree with you more. That's a huge passion for me. Yep.
You know, like one of the things I was thinking about, and I was wondering what your opinion would be on this because of your experiences with youth, when we look at some of the issues that we're having with kids coming into college, the lack of free play with our kids at the lower ages, the middle schoolers, the youth, is, you know, the big thing that I've seen a lot now is a tremendous amount of shoulder issues with kids coming into school. For whatever reasons, it doesn't matter. But, you know, it could be too much, you know, typical high school weight rooms, press, 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 no pulls, no pulls, no pulls. You know, do the show muscles and not the go muscles. Train what you
right.
see in the mirror. Do nothing with what you want to do to be a championship athlete, which is what you don't see in the mirror. But I've thought about this. I have no empirical research. This is just an observational research for the most part, is how many of these shoulder issues could be alleviated if kids were still going to playgrounds and swinging on monkey bars 2 or 3 days a week.
Well, Joe,
I mean,
you're right. 100% right on that one. Absolutely, without question. I've been saying it for 10 years myself. You could not be more right with that assertion.
You know, I mean, those, you know, I look at things like, and again, why do I look at things like that now? I'll tell you exactly why. Because I got a 17-year-old son and a 13-year-old son.
Right.
If I didn't have children, I don't know if I even worry about that component. But I know what I've always worried about and didn't have the confidence or maybe the experience and or credibility to do it is, ever since I took over, I knew we missed the boat based on my experience as a strength trained athlete when I first started, because I was one of those, okay, you're 13, throw them in the weight room, off you go.
Sure.
There's relative body strength and the ability just to move your body before putting an external load. Those have been critical. I've always said this, you know, when I've become more a fan on not the number you lift, but how much it is relative to your body weight.
Right.
That has become a little bit more of an enhancement. That's one of the things I spoke with a colleague of mine yesterday on the phone when he asked me, you know, the big question that everybody's throwing out is how strong is strong enough for an athlete? And I think a lot of it I would look at more on relative terms and different exercises, possibly finding a relative term that is sufficient and then finding ways to exploit that to continue to make some type of improvement. I don't think you can just say, okay, the athlete squats 2 times his body weight. He doesn't have to get stronger. I think now you look at different ways to get him stronger. Maybe you're not doing one RM work. Maybe you're doing multiple ones with short rest periods to see how well they can maintain their strength endurance.
Mm.
You know, certain ways to continue to enhance improvement but not necessarily be worried about chasing a number.
Well said.
So, excuse me?
I said that was very well said. Yeah. I like the fact you just said that. That's maybe we get a little bit too narrow focused on trying to make our athletes stronger, and we should be a little bit more cognizant of relative strength and how we can manipulate volume, intensity, and a whole lot of other things rather than shooting for a number. I love the fact you just said that. That applies to everybody, high school, college, and beyond.
No, anybody. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I think that we, you know, again, we have done – I understand record keeping because obviously you want to see improvement. I understand goal setting. But that's improvement, you know, ways to set goals and have guys have aspire to things. There's no question I believe in that. Some people do a better job than others. But when we go out of our way to bastardize lifting technique to make sure an athlete improves because a football coach puts a mandate in that we have to have these many guys set personal records every time we test, well, how real true, if there's any truth to transfer, how true could a athlete who power cleans 400 pounds from the floor where the first pull becomes almost a straight leg deadlift, so he really cannot generate the hip extension needed to relate to the component of transfer that the football coach may want, then it turns into a power reverse curl by him bouncing the legs, the bar off of his thighs
right.
into a jumping jack catch. I don't think that transfers to the things that we were asking from an athletic component.
Right. Well said.
And again, hey, man, and I'll tell you, I can't, you know, I'm not going to lie. I've had athletes do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't know no different until as I got older. And like I said, with more confidence, you know, we more confidence and more relations of your ability. But going back to the body weight stuff, you know, when I first was at Boise State, I was like, man, we need to be doing more of this gymnastic stuff. And then I was always like, well, man, we only got 4 or 5 years with it. It's too late. You know, they should have been doing this earlier. Well, as I've gotten older, wiser, smarter, really understanding what our true goal and what our true service to the athlete is,
uh-huh.
is to protect and produce.
Right.
You know, those are things that you start saying, hey, wait a second. And then when you look at it from the standpoint of pure strength, power, leanness or lean body mass types of things, when you really look at it from a college standpoint, and obviously there's different sports out there, but in my experiences, the two specific sports that one have the most lean body mass per overall mass have the best relative external load strength, meaning when you take the number of what they've done in the weight room and compare it to their body weight, have the highest, and also have extreme power because of those two things, because they're leaner, they're more efficient, they're stronger with their own ability to move their body. So now, and when they put external load, are wrestlers and gymnasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
And when you really study the dynamics of their sport, what is really it's about? It's about their ability to handle their own body weight.
Mm-hmm.
So if those sports are enhanced by what they do naturally and what occurs, how can that not be a benefit to any other athlete? I think we all say I can't remember who it was. Somebody related the amount of chin ups an athlete could do to how well he could run.
Hmm.
You know, I can't, I mean, and I might be way off the board, but there was something about, you know, relative strength and the ability to, you know, run fast.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, so yeah, like with single leg squatting and things like that, you know, it's all a process to, you know, and everything's teachable and everything has the ability to succeed. But so what we've kind of come to our block zero, you know, the first 3 week program is very little external load except for technique.
Mm-hmm.
We're teaching mobility, isometric strength, stabilization holds, and as well as developing our relative strength or body weight movement plan, which all relates into, as they progress, what you see in dynamic warm-up and
mm-hmm.
pre-activity prep stuff, but we make that a specific concept when they come in. And if you design it right, I mean, one of the best things, you know, when we started this stuff at Arizona State, and our football coaches got to watch it when the freshmen came in during camp, they were like, wow, that's, you know, and you could break a guy off.
Yep.
I mean, you could break a guy off doing ISO holds, and I've broken off a couple of groups in presentation style. I'm speaking in San Jose next week on the Block Zero concept. I'm speaking at Carlos Clinic on the Block Zero conflict. And you know what? We're getting everybody up, and we're going to go through a couple of mini circuits just to prove a point. And I'm not meaning that in a derogatory way. I'm meaning it in what I learned at football camps while I was at Arizona State. Don't tell me you can squat 600 and you can't hold an isometric parallel squat with good position for 30 seconds. Don't tell me you can squat 600. I put you in an iso lunge hold where the top of the thigh is parallel on the forward leg, and within 20 seconds, you're wobbling and you're almost tipping over.
Right.
I mean, right. These are things that, you know, I want to keep reiterating this to your listeners because, hey, I didn't do it this way all the time.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I think a lot of people, and that's one thing, like I've told younger strength coaches when they tell me, we might have conflicting agree to disagree type conversations. They're like, well, I read the same books you read. Well, you didn't read the books I read for the last 12 years to get to the books we're reading right now.
Right. Well said. Yeah. I've long maintained the only reason I know I ever had an inkling of knowing what I was doing in the weight room was because I made every mistake possible along the process of figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, just like, you know, variations and, you know, if, and I hate to say it because, you know, it's, you know, and I'm not saying it I don't know if I'm a fan or not. I mean, you know, everybody's been talking about trends in weightlifting and different types of things you're seeing. Well, here's what I know. There's a reason why it's called trends. And when it's all said and done, regardless of the facility you walk in, everyone's got barbells and dumbbells. Those aren't trends. Those are staples.
Yep.
You know, kettlebells have been around for hundreds of years. You think somebody just threw a cannonball and put a handle on it and created kettlebells.
Right.
I'm not saying they're not useful. I know several coaches that I highly respect that are excellent with them. But, you know, for people, you're not going to build your program around kettlebells.
Yeah, I hear you. Yep.
You know, but it's like, you know, we talk about, you know, programming structure of exercises. The body will survive in advance. You know, look at everybody in the CrossFit phase.
Mm.
That there ain't no rhyme or reason. That's organized, unorganized chaos.
Right. Yep.
I mean, it's a circuit, and everybody goes, oh, CrossFit. I was talking to a buddy of mine who owns his own studio in Idaho with his dad. His dad's CrossFit certified, and we were laughing. I said, hey, man, that ain't no different than when I put you through those stupid circuits just to beat you down on Fridays with the freshmen to help build camaraderie and mental toughness.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, it's just, hey, man, what are we going to do? Oh, let's throw 20 things together and just run it. You know, we used to
good point.
You know, jog down, you know, at Boise State, we were right off the Boise River. Well, low tide, we jogged the team down to the river on the river rocks, pick up whatever stones we could and just make up exercises and tell a kid, okay, pass the stone to the right of you, and whatever the stone weighed, you just do what the stone was.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and the guys had fun. It was engaging. We got them out of the weight room. It, you know, it's a spice of life. I mean, everything, you know, that's one thing what really happened in 19, what year was it when Philippi really started getting big into the strongman and people started adapt? I mean, I think it was in like 97-ish when we started bringing flipping tires and stones and things like that into our program at Boise State. Was more for one variety, keeping them engaged. But you know, at that point in time, our equipment budget—I think our budget for the whole weight room was $3,500. We were just finding ways to have fun, and get them out of the weight room, and there was some merit. I mean, obviously, there's certain strongman exercises that don't really have merit to overall, you know, athleticism, but then there's some that do.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick and choose. You figure out how it fits, and you know, and I think you know that was a trend. I think, so, you know, like everything else, oh, that guy does strongman all day. No, I don't. I like it. I like some of the pieces. We did more some than others, and I like some of that stuff, but it's not like, oh, yeah, we're doing 100%.
Right.
You know, med ball work, or we're flipping tires instead of doing cleans.
Right.
Hey, it's a pretty good deal, but no, we're doing, it's not the whole package. It's part of a plan, and that's how the longer you're in it, the more tools for your toolbox you're going to have. But I think the one thing that you always have to remember, when you get to a point where you've established some type of programmed system of training that in your heart you're like, this is mine, or this is ours, or this is my deal, or how I'm going to do this, and you get to that point, you're always going to have your staples.
Yeah, that's true.
You just can't get away from them.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, like I spoke on a podcast the other day for, you know, Mike Boyle's Strength Coach podcast, and Anthony Reyna, who does those things, he kind of was funny. He goes, you know, I looked through your stuff, and, you know, Coach Boyle was talking about not doing the back squat or doing double leg squats anymore. And if anybody looks at your stuff right away, they can see that, okay, this dude's program is built around the squat.
Mm-hmm.
But what he noticed as he was reading the stuff was, but then there's a high amount of single leg work done.
Sure. So, I mean, I think like all of us, we have our basics, our foundations. We go back to them a lot, but it's about adding other pieces as they come in, as we learn about them, and finding what works best. That's the best kind of policy, I think, for any strength coach is never close your heart or your mind to anything as it comes to you. Just find ways and try it all and keep what you like, essentially.
Well, and that's one thing, like, I've tried to reiterate to people when I speak at these clinics, and it all goes back to absorb, modify, and apply.
Mm.
You know, you can get overwhelmed with the amount of things and the amount of knowledge and the amount of great things that people are speaking about. It can drive you crazy if you let it. But everybody's situation is slightly unique.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that you have to remember is that you know what you know. You know what you can take from each presentation and possibly modify it and apply it to your program.
Right.
I mean, that's what people need to understand. I don't think you're doing yourself a service and or your athletes when you jump on the trends, because then what are you selling to the athlete that you believe in? It was like the one time right around when chains and bands were going good. And I might be wrong. I think that's when Vern Gambetta was really pumping the med ball stuff. And I think Juan Carlos Santana in that late 90s area. That became really popular. And there was a coach I know that, because he was trying to keep his athletes on his side, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, they went through an 8-week cycle of chains and bands, and all of a sudden they're doing 8 weeks of med ball, and then all of a sudden they're doing stability ball work. Well, you haven't done nothing for the kid.
Right.
And now the kid's looking at you like, man, what the hell is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So now you've not helped yourself and your staff and your program, where, hey, man, there's a use for med balls. There's a use for stability balls. I mean, people use them differently. Obviously, there's a use for chains and bands. My concept's always been, how does that fit into the integrity of what I'm doing without breaking what I believe I stand for?
Sure.
You know, and that's where you have to figure it out. I mean, yeah, you may evolve into being more of this than that, but what's wrong with that?
Of course, yep.
I mean, my biggest thing has always been passion, heart, selling. And what I see based on my evaluation on the floor, what I hear, the feedback I get from my athletes, and what my gut tells me.
Yeah. Coach, let me tell you, I'm going to stop us there, because I have found something in my career of doing interviews like this that with the very best coaches in the world, more often than not, all I like to do is ask one question at the start and just let you go. And what you've done here today is absolutely brilliant. We all got a chance to look inside the mind of Coach Joe Ken, one of the best in the business, the best as far as I'm concerned anywhere in college athletics, and one of the top five in the world in terms of what you do and what you know. That was just priceless to me, and I love not getting in the way of this stuff, just asking one question, let the ball get rolling, and then let you have at it. For folks listening also, I want to say that Coach Ken, I'm going to try and persuade him with all my might to get involved in what we're doing with the IYCA. So with any luck and a lot of ambition from my end, you guys are going to have a lot of information coming from Coach Ken over the next several months and years pertaining to all of his insight and knowledge. And today was just a very small sampling, but boy, that was some great information, man. Coach, I can't thank you enough. Thank you for everything today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. I know we were trying to get this done a couple of weeks ago, and it's my pleasure for sure. And like I said, if there's anything that I can do to help enhance what your goals and aspirations are with the IYCA, especially now that I have real live information from training adolescents, in particular my sons. I mean, I have real world stuff that I think that would have a lot of relevance to what you guys are trying to accomplish.
Absolutely, man. Well, you can bank on it. I will be in touch very soon, man. Thank you so much for today.
Okay. Good luck to everybody out there. Bye-bye.
Be well.